Hello, iGaming Intelligentsia. Before we start today's podcast, here is a message from our sponsors. The iGaming Next podcast is made possible with the support from our sponsors at Pragmatic Solutions, leaders in intelligent platform technology. I've been working with Ashley, Lewis, and the guys over at Pragmatic Solutions over the last year. And as the early supporter of this podcast, I cannot recommend them enough. The Pragmatic Solutions Player Account Management Platform is an incredibly powerful technology stack for today's gaming business. Their modern modular platform provides all the core services to power your business, and their SaaS licensing model allows you to reduce cost and accelerate your strategic goals. Enterprise technology with decades of operational know-how at scale built in. Upgrade your business to the Pragmatic Solutions PAM platform. Visit www.pragmatic.solutions to arrange a platform demo.
This podcast is brought to you by Hub 88, a lightweight integration platform built on Exelair, offering seamless wallet API for casino operations. It currently interacts with over 50 providers and 2,000 plus games, giving access to many tier one suppliers while also supporting new studios, distribution, and key components such as game engines, provably fair RNGs, RGs, and investments into new startups. To find out more, visit hub88.io. Friends, deep insights, industry leaders. This is the iGaming Next podcast with your host, Pierre Lint.
All right, James Tecluna, how are you doing this morning?
Hi, Pierre. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Good morning. Very well, thank you as well. Good morning to you. Good morning. So as a short introduction here as we get started today, James, you're the co-managing partner at WH Partners here, based in Malta, a business law firm focused on the kind of digital economy, gaming, and so on and so forth. Do you want to start today, just expand a little bit your background on WH Partners, perhaps?
Of course. I'm a lawyer, as you know. And as you rightly pointed out, I'm one of two co-managing partners of our firm, business law firm, which is headquartered in Malta. I have, throughout my life, I have worked as a corporate lawyer. I then gravitated into the gambling industry, or rather acting for the gambling industry on regulatory matters. So throughout my career, I've done both of these things. I've done corporate M&A work and work for the gambling industry, and very often they meet. So I end up doing corporate and regulatory work in the gambling industry. I have a keen interest in the regulation of the sector. I worked in-house as general counsel of an online gambling operator for some years. And during that time, I was involved in various policy issues which arose in jurisdictions which the operator I worked with had business in. And I have remained keenly interested in policy issues surrounding the regulation of gambling.
William, thank you for that introduction, James. And I don't think it's escaped anyone at this point, but of course, a couple of days ago here, the FATF, the Financial Action Task Force, essentially announced that, or they did not announce yet, they're announcing today, I believe, the press conferences, but it's been decided that Malta is going to be put on this grey list that has been talked about in media now the last couple of days. And this is of special interest, obviously, from the industry that we are from the gambling industry. Just for you to have some background here as well, we had a discussion amongst the industry here in Clubhouse yesterday. It was represented about 50 industry leaders, something along those lines, who are trying to kind of dissect this move and what it will mean for them and what it will mean for Malta. But obviously, we are not experts in this field by any means, so that's why I'm curious to have you on today on the podcast, and basically to open up the conversation today, to hear your perspective on this. What do you think this grey listing will mean to Malta, and by extension to the local iGaming industry?
Well, unfortunately, I missed that discussion you had yesterday, and I'd also be interested to know what sort of views were shared. Maybe we can have some exchanges on that throughout the course of this conversation.
Absolutely.
It wasn't a secret. It was, you know, well known that Malta was undergoing an audit by an organization called Manival, which is the Council of Europe sort of monitoring body that has to do with the readiness of countries to deal with issues surrounding financial crime. So how they regulate, what levels of compliance they have, how they enforce. And that had been going on now for some time. That is a regular process. It happens periodically with all Council of Europe members. So right. Malta was not sort of hand-picked for an audit. It is a periodic audit. And there were noises about, you know, Malta, also because of some preliminary reports issued by the Manival auditors, showing that Malta was not fully compliant in some areas and was non-compliant in some areas. There was nervousness about Malta being able to upgrade certain of its laws, certain of its enforcement practices in order to comply with what is expected basically by, let's say, the developed world, right? The international sort of economic order, in terms of how our country deals with issues such as financial crime. And over the past two or so years, or maybe two, 3 years, in fact, you know, quite a lot of legislative changes were made, probably over a period which is a bit longer, a period probably ranging up to about 5 years, a very noticeable difference towards compliance and enforcement by a lot of local regulators was adopted as well. And this final Manival report was published, I believe, 2 months ago or so. And right. the report basically concluded that there were no areas in which Malta was non-compliant. Right. So a lot of the nervousness that there was around whether Malta would make it or not, this famous grey list which you referred to, you know, seemed to dissipate, and people were quite bullish and confident about Malta not being grey listed. But it went to this decision, right, by the FATF, the Financial Action Task Force, which is, as you know, a global organization very much influenced by the US, that does this international monitoring on levels of compliance, financial crime, etc. And although it could have been anticipated, right, there was a possibility that Malta would be grey listed. I don't think we expected it to. But people thought, okay, the technical audit by Manival turned out to be fine. So, you know, Malta did, right, over the past years, up its standards in a lot of these areas that were looked at. I think it was slightly unexpected. It was always possible, but it came as a bit of a surprise. And of course, now there is a lot of talk about it. I can tell you from my experience, Pierre, that, you know, businesses established here, but which have business interests around the world, or groups which have business interests here, so international groups with business interests here, have been looking at this whole risk of a possible grey listing for Malta now for several years. Okay. And then there's others who probably thought that Malta would not be grey listed and started to look at it now and trying to assess what this means. I think if you look at it from the gambling industry point of view, the first thing that comes to mind is, what implications does this have on relationships between operators and financial institutions, banks, right, etc., because that impacts, know, the ability to move funds, ranging from, you know, player deposits, withdrawals, but also funds between group companies, dividend upwards, etc. So that is an area to be looked at. And I can share my views with you on that now, if you like, and we can sort of dissect it this way. My experience also suggests that a lot of the risk that has to do with, had to do with the possibility of Malta being grey listed was already factored in by many financial institutions around the world. You know that banks and other financial institutions keep lists of jurisdictions, and they treat customers from those jurisdictions in part based on how those jurisdictions are classified.
Right.
So several banks and several other financial institutions around the world had already factored the possibility of Malta being grey listed into that risk analysis of theirs.
Right.
The question now is whether Malta actually being grey listed might vary that. And it's to me, it's quite hard to anticipate whether it will. I suspect with many, it probably won't. But I think the best approach is sort of a wait-and-see approach, with sort of ears close to the ground, and more importantly, being properly connected and engaging with the banks and financial institutions that operators use. So, individual businesses, I think, would be very well advised to be listening carefully and to be inquiring as to, the views of their banking and partners and other financial institutions they use. So I think that's my sense on the risk related to banking. There's another risk, potentially, which is a regulatory risk, or an area of risk which should be considered. Regulatory risk meaning what? Meaning the relationships with regulators which govern operators. As you know, in Malta, there's several operators, several companies, which operate from Malta on the strength of licenses they have from other EU countries.
Right.
Now, the thing is, with these operators, the regulators in those other countries already know them well. And I would struggle to see why regulators in those other EU countries would change their view of those operators based on them being in Malta. Because fundamentally, those other regulators are primarily interested in those operators and those Maltese companies' compliance with the laws that apply in those other countries, right? So French license, French compliance, Italian, Danish, etc., Swedish, etc. So I struggle to see why they would change their approach just based on their licensees being in Malta. Also, there's a very important principle in Europe, which is the ability of somebody to establish a company where they want, right? Freedom of establishment. And that's something else that needs to be kept in mind. I'm not sure there is an enormous risk there. On top of that, I actually think that this whole grey listing business has much more to do with broader issues around enforcement locally, and not so much in regulated industries. Like anybody who is familiar with how remote gaming is regulated in Malta, and with how the MGA over the years has very, very much tightened its controls, its supervision, and its enforcement, will know that there is, in this country, from the MGA's point of view, certainly supervision and enforcement, which is similar, if not in some cases superior, to that which there is by regulators in a lot of other developed countries.
Right.
I think that point also applies to banking locally. I mean, anybody who has had to do with the banking system in Malta over the past probably up to 5 years, will know that there has been such a tightening in terms of compliance with extremely close scrutiny of transactions on an individual level, with in-depth due diligence on customers, which I think, in my experience, goes way and beyond what a lot of financial institutions in other developed countries do, actually. So I really think the issues here are not so much with the regulated industries of Malta. There is tightening, which needs to be done around broader enforcement issues.
Right, and that's what it seems to boil down to. There was an article today that basically detailed this, that it's that although Malta has enacted a lot of rules and regulations in the past couple of years to comply, it seems that it is the enforcement and the failings in actually enacting these new rules and regulations that has been the downfall here, in a sense. But what do you think, James, it will take for Malta to get back into kind of becoming a whitelisted country again? Is there any indications, would say? Is it down to the enforcement? Is it down to be able to enforce these rules and regulations that have been implemented?
Look, I think there's definitely hope and, in a sense, optimism that Malta can make it back to the whitelist in a relatively short period of time. And we know that is possible, because if you look at Iceland, Iceland was grey-listed by the FATF in 2019 and then made it back onto the whitelist in 2020.
Right.
And in Malta, so anybody familiar with the legislative system, with the system of laws here, with laws which have been enacted, with the way regulated industries operate, know that a lot is actually right. But I think there are failings that have to do with enforcement more broadly. And that is, enforcement more broadly when it comes to various types of, crime or wrongdoing. And I was reading, I think just the other day, a statistic related to the amount of goods or the value of goods or money confiscated by law enforcement authorities from criminals. And when you compare it, even just proportionately, to the level of money or goods that are confiscated in other countries, that's really quite low. So, for example, that's an area where definitely Malta needs to improve its game. I think what this is really is it's a bit of a shock to the system, saying, technically, I refer here to the Manival audit. So we recognize that Malta has made leaps and bounds and is in a place where it really complies, essentially, from a technical point of view, with what is expected of a participant, of a country which is a participant in the international economy. But there is a sort of a last leg to go, which is ensuring that all of those laws are properly and strictly applied, and that if there are persons who commit a crime, do wrongdoing, justice is served, and probably served also swiftly. I think that's what it is. I have to say, I'm quite hopeful that this will turn around and Malta will be re-whitelisted within a short period of time. And I'm getting asked this question a lot, as you might imagine. So what is the risk? What are the consequences?
Yeah. There we go. You're back.
A bit of a glitch. I think every business, every business which is properly run, analyzes the way forward, analyzes how would analyze how this might impact them. If they feel it might impact them, I'm sure the contingency plans will be made. I don't think that Wednesday's news relating to the grey listing should lead to any knee-jerk reactions, because in a sense, I think that the changes which need to be implemented in Malta, enforcement-wise, are actually quite easily achievable with the sort of the commitment and effort, which does not get entangled in Malta's sort of local political controversies. So there has to be focus and single-mindedness on getting those that enforcement done. And I think it's possible. So I don't think any knee-jerk reactions would be advisable right now. And businesses really ought to stay on top of exactly what their banks and what their financial institutions, including payment service providers, etc., are thinking, how they're approaching this, thinking in terms of their regulators and so on. But doing it in an unemotional sort of manner.
And so we talk about that it boils down to the lack of enforcement to the rules and regulations that have been implemented. But what about the island kind of taking advantage of its positioning and small size in terms of trying to gain competitive advantages against other nations in terms of, for example, the 5% corporate tax scheme, the passport scheme, for example, being associated to, let's say, questionable industries, gambling, crypto, whether that's right or wrong, but it's still seen as questionable industries from abroad, perhaps. Do you think that there's a combination of this together with the lack of enforcement? Because on an EU level, of course, Malta hasn't been seen favorable from these type of schemes that have been implemented in order to gain a competitive advantage and attract investment and organizations moving here.
Look, there are many small nations around the world, and there are many mid-sized nations around the world, all of which seek to utilize their ingenuity in terms of industries which they would like to attract to their borders, and that includes regulating specific industries in particular ways ahead of the game, such as what Malta did with the remote gambling industry. It almost inevitably includes seeking to have an attractive fiscal system, etc. So I don't think that Malta being inventive in this way and being sort of ahead of the game in some areas like gambling and like regulation of certain aspects of, let's call it, the blockchain economy, probably helped terribly, but I don't think they are to blame. You see, the issue is not that. The issue is not that. If you look at the Western nations where, let's say, crypto is mostly used or traded, and where it's obtaining most investment from the traditional economy. I mean, look at the US. I don't think that in itself is the right scapegoat. So if you ask me, was there anything wrong with Malta's approach to how it wanted to attract the so-called blockchain industry, I'll tell you there was a lot wrong with it. But what I would say is that this sudden manic hype which was created was wrong. But fundamentally, if you look at Malta's regulatory framework in this area, it is very solid. And when I say it is very solid, I mean, in truth, it is only appealing to the largest and most seriously run and best funded players in the market, because it is very tight, it's very strict.
Right.
With gambling, I'm convinced that Malta has got itself to a place in terms of its laws, but also in terms of its supervision and enforcement, that is at par or even superior to a lot of other countries. Tax is tax. Yes, you will always have bigger countries, especially especially in Europe, you know, where you have some countries which adopt very high taxation models that don't really like that there's others around that have lower tax and who are not, which are not fans of tax competition. But tax competition is something healthy. What is really important, and the way in the way the world has developed and in the way that international tax rules have developed, is that a country doesn't open itself up to the suggestion that it is merely a location for sort of letterbox companies. You see, it's all well and good to benefit from lower tax rates if you justifiably can, because you actually have a productive activity and substance and presence in that country. But I mean, I don't think the intention was to transform this into a conversation about tax, right? No. To get back to your question, I don't think any of those things, okay, really have much to do with the gray listing.
Okay.
I think there are scapegoats and pretexts, and none of the countries in the FATF could have justifiably argued that Malta should be gray listed on any of those points, not on having a different tax system, not on regulating the gambling industry, not on having sought to regulate, to introduce a regulatory framework for, let's call them blockchain type businesses, just not to get into much technical detail. I think it's the other, you know, broader and enforcement issues, which we discussed, which really might have led to this.
Right. So in your view,
in fact, it
comes down to enforcement.
I think so. I mean, there's also an interesting article published this morning in the Times of Malta, which which seems to suggest that it's based on information from sources within the FATF, pointing their fingers specifically at this point, at this issue, enforcement.
Right. I read that article today as well. So as a final question today, and So we talked about it comes down to enforcement here, essentially. I can put you in the know, you know, the discussions that happened yesterday here on the Clubhouse session that we did. It's obviously there's a lot of worry within the industry. And I think, again, when it comes down to how will this affect the individual organizations, now it was talked about, as you mentioned here as well, it's already difficult to do banking as an iGaming entity, and kind of being an iGaming entity and being based in Malta could be seen as a bit of a double whammy in the eyes of these organizations, in a sense. And I've been during the last couple of years, I know that there's been a lot of talks behind the door, so to say, on what will the organizations, what actions will they take if Malta would become gray listed. This doesn't come as a surprise for the iGaming industry and its players locally in Malta. Do you think there is a risk that there'll be some form of exodus from Malta? Do you think that there'll be some drastic actions? Do you think in the short term, medium term, long term, what are some potential actions that we could see from the iGaming players here in Malta?
I don't think that well-run businesses operate on the basis of knee-jerk reactions. I think that even those organizations which have a contingency plan for a scenario like this would have inbuilt into that contingency plan room to be able to assess the situation if an eventuality like this had to come about. I would be surprised if we were to see any knee-jerk reactions. I really would be. If this went on for several years, so if Malta weren't able to come off the grey list for several years, or if the ability of businesses established here to carry on conducting business as they do is prejudiced as a result of this grey list thing due to factors which we discussed earlier on in the podcast, then of course I would expect to see movement. But it's too early to say.
Brilliant. And final question here as well, James. Do you think there is a risk for further de-risking by the local banks? For example, BEV, HBC and others have obviously been de-risking themselves over the last couple of years, and a lot of accounts associated to gaming has been closed, particularly smaller organizations. Do you think that this will be accelerated?
Look, I struggle to imagine what further de-risking would look like. Because as you know, and as you correctly pointed out, over the past years, there has been an immense and very deep de-risking exercise by all local banks. You mentioned BOV, but it's just one of them. So the level of probity, of intrusion, of analysis that the banks here have been doing over the past years on every single account holder and on every single transaction is, I think, sort of at the top end of what could possibly be expected from any financial institution anywhere.
Right.
In fact, I would say that what has happened is not so much a de-risking exercise, but an attempt at eliminating risk. You think that in a regular de-risking exercise, there would be some sort of proportionality involved, no, between risk and reward, and maybe you know, a desire to keep interesting business accounts, views taken on business models which the bank understands. But the risking exercise was, I'm on it. It was a,
yeah.
It was huge. It was huge. The amount of people and companies who had accounts terminated. I mean, you had individuals having accounts terminated. On the basis of, you know, things like them having worked for a particular company and not even an executive position or a management position. Small businesses, you know, not being able to bank. I can't imagine what any further de-risking would look like.
All right.
Because of my practice, I have experience dealing with similar situations in some other territories. And you know, there's a few countries in Europe where the same thing has been done. But I think what's been done here in terms of the banks is sort of up there with those other countries where banks de-risk the most.
Right, right. Well, thank you so much, James, for coming on today. I think the perspective that you give here is kind of like that. From international level, Malta has already been treated as if it was already halfway there to grey listing by the international banks. And this is what I'm hearing as well from some lagging organization, is that from an international bank point of view, there isn't much changes expected, so to say, with by this grey listing. The banks have already kind of made their own risk analysis before this grey listing, so you reiterated that. And also it comes down to the enforcement then from the Maltese authorities on the financial and economic rules and regulations in place in order to potentially then get back to a whitelisted status as soon as the island can.
Yes,
and
you yes, also, but I yeah. again I want to emphasize that it is not the lack of enforcement in regulated industries; it's a broader issue.
Okay, right. I understand. All right, brilliant. Thank you so much, James, for coming today. I appreciate that you did this on the short notice, and I know you have a meeting to jump into. So I'm going to wish you a great Friday afternoon. And thank
thanks.
You so much.
Nice. Is there
any last words?
Bye. Brilliant. Bye, Pierre. No, thanks for the invite. Nice chatting with you. Bye-bye.
Brilliant.